Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
In herbal cures, we have a number of cures which were common knowledge. Most people knew of them, knew the herbs, and if they wanted to use them, they would just go out in the field or the woods and collect the herbs and use them. But a number of remedies were held by a number of families. Certain family would have a cure, and it would be passed down. And it's very difficult to get information on these because the people usually won't disclose the names of the herbs used. They will make an ointment for you if you visit them, and they won't accept any fee at all. It was believed if you accepted a fee that the cure, you would lose the power of the cure.
In those once-on-a-time days of the 1780s and 90s, the herbs of the medical old women were sometimes successfully resorted to, whether accidental or actual preventatives or antidotes, it's not easy to determine. The class of old women called Kylox were held in the highest estimation as understanding the cure, that is, if God pleased, of all disorders. Their materia medica did not consist of gums, resins, minerals, and hot iron, as the farriers did, but of leaves of bushes, bark of trees, weeds from churchyards and mushrooms from fairy grounds, rue, garlic, rosemary, birds' nests, foxglove, etc. In desperate cases, they sometimes found it advisable to put a charm into the bolus or stoup, and then it was sure to be firm and good. I never could find out what either of those charms were. They said they should die themselves if they disclosed them to anybody.
Ah, well, I want no crack over the radio. No,
I want no... You have a cure for warts, isn't that right?
I haven't, no. I gave it away long ago.
No,
I gave it away long ago.
Who did you give it to?
Oh, it doesn't matter who I give it to. I'm not going to tell you how I make the cure for the warts.
They have a large part to play in the folklore. They are found over and over again in divination purposes for marriage. Put a certain herb under your pillow, usually on a certain night of the year, and you dreamt of your future husband, or I'm sure wife, as the case may be. And they were used for dyeing materials according to the different colours of the plants. Different parts of the plant were used, roots, leaves, flowers. Then they were used widely in the kitchen for flavouring, and certain plants were eaten as blood tonics, like nettles, three meals of nettles in the spring, and you were guaranteed not to have any pimples or rashes for the rest of the year. The main use of herbs in folklore is in folk curing, and there are many hundreds of different herbs used in this area.
There's the slanus now. It's a rib leaf. And it grows now in a long rib leaf, and it grows a blackhead on it with stalks and little seeds on it. Well, if you got a cut or was in danger of bleeding, is it? You get that and you put it in boiling water and you chew it in your mouth. Chew it in your mouth up into pressure. And you put it, spit it onto a linen bandage, and you put it on the cuts and stop the blood immediately.
In regard to my cure for herb, and as a herbalist, it is through my mother I got to know about these herbs, that she was a kind of a herbalist too, and that I'm getting these herbs for years from London, as I used to get them in my own country, but that they perished out. But I'm getting them through London for the purpose of curing the people of gallstones and kidney troubles and various other stomach troubles as well.
These are the herbs that are good for their pottage: liverwort, mallows, violets, lettuce, patients, but lettuce especially good for sufferers from hectic fever, as they needed to make them sleep. In this sickness, the following are good: maidenhair, mint, polytrichum, together with licorice and mallow flowers, also roses along with large cold seeds and sugar. Rub salt and vinegar to his veins and feet, wash them with sally and vine leaves.
The use of herbs in medicine goes back to the earliest recorded times. The Irish Druids relied heavily on them, and in early Irish literature, one of the doctors of the legendary Tuatha De Danann is said to have revived his warriors for battle and healed their wounds in a bath of herbs. The excerpt we've just heard is from Rosa Anglica, a medieval textbook in Latin by John of Gaddesden, translated into early modern Irish around the year 1460, but, strangely enough, not into English until 1929. Like other medieval medical works, it's full of quaint and ingenuous cures, often involving the use of herbs.
Laish na parelisha, mas feda leisha na hara ulingt, chymeltar an bal chin na nantio gregach agus da haiden talun, malele fool, agus chymeltar an bal. If the patient can endure it, rub the limb with fenugreek and ground ivy, together with urine, as the unnatural things should be drawn to dryness. So things roasted with spices are good for them, and let them consume but little food and drink for the space of 6 days. Then take calamint and camphor, sage, onions, wild sage, avens, primrose, ground ivy, plenty of them, bruise them and add gander's lard and that of a dog and a black cat, pepper 3.5. Then place them in the belly of a black cat, having removed the innards and its skin from it. Roast the whole and remove the juice that comes out of it in this way and rub it on the sick limb. The comfort derived therefrom is marvellous and the ointment is named after the cat.
What was the official, if unsophisticated, medicine of an earlier age has often survived in the folk cure, and many of the practices and beliefs still found in the Irish countryside are no less extraordinary than those of the medieval herbalists. This cure for the foot rot in cattle and sheep, for example, from County Leitrim.
I offer this cure on the saint to cure it. For such a man's beast, that's naming who owns the beast, do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Or the colour of her. To cure the foot rot.
Would you have to see it?
You have to see it.
But would you have the animal beside you when you're doing it? No, you needn't have
be,
the animal.
It could
here
be in America.
Yes.
Well, then you cut tin herbs, tin dandelions, with a black handle knife, and just lay them where they're cut. The 9 of them. Lay them where you cut them. Bring away the tenth one. And send it to the man that has the animals with the foot rot, and he rubs it down, not up, round about, and rub it in the heels where it's taken, and bury it, and all's over. That's the cure.
Many of the herbal cures are, of course, much less mystical than that. Indeed, the use of herbs in folk medicine is often quite rational and based on sound traditional wisdom. A Sligo doctor.
On Inishmurry, they were used by a very famous character in Inishmurry, Crimley. His real name was Hart. Now, he used a dressing for burns. It was a green alga, freshwater alga. And when it was applied, it formed an adhesive, occlusive dressing. Now, it functioned just in the same way as the preparation known as Tanifex, which was a preparation of tannic acid and was the standard treatment for burns between about 1930 and 1950. He had been using his herb, which he called conure, a name that has given some difficulty in tracing.
You've never found out what the English
equivalent
name,
yes,
of
but
it.
We have somebody at the Botanic Gardens onto it at the moment. We hope to find it. Now, the other thing that I saw him use, he was really a practitioner rather than one of the people that used cures for everything. He worked intelligently at his surgery or his medicine. I saw him use pounded comfrey to make a cast for a fractured patella, a fractured kneecap. He had several young boys with stones pounding the comfrey, and then he worked it into a mass and applied it, and it dried out as a nice, resilient, but quite effective cast.
And was there anything you think in the comfrey itself that was good for the complaint?
I don't think so. I think he was using it just physically as you do plaster Paris.
Mm. And it has that quality?
It has that quality, yeah, only when pounded. Mm. Yes. And comfrey now is a herb that's used for God knows how many things. In England, they make tea out of its leaves and they drink it and they take it as a, an internal medicine and they apply it here or there. But I never heard of anybody using it to make a plaster except Dominic.
Then there was another herb on the corner, the comfrey. It's grown up together there. It grows that height and a purple blossom on it. Comfrey, and if you had a broken bone or any part of your bone is broke, you go up and you dig up the comfrey, and when you dig it up, it's like a mango root. And you see the oil running out of the root. And you take and you pound that between two big stones. And you put it on where the bone is supposed to be broke, or where your shin bone, if you've got a bad knock or a bad foot. And put it on that, and in 3 weeks, it'll knit the bone together. The comfrey root.
Another cure for burns, different from that mentioned earlier from Inishmurry, comes from Mrs. A.J. Gillespie from Crossnahan, County Roscommon.
It's an ointment that's made up with an herb called fogrum, and I boil that with beeswax and lard till it goes quite crisp, and then I strain it into a jar, and it sets like an ointment, and that's supposed to be applied to a burn twice a day on a linen. And it has never failed. It's in the family for over 200 years. And it has gone all over the countryside.
Do a lot of people come to you with
yes.
burns?
Yes, people come at all hours of the day and night, and sometimes I have to dress the wounds, and some people come in a state of shock, and I usually give them a cup of tea. And it has never failed in all my lifetime.
They'd come to you immediately, they get the burn?
Yes.
Would it not take you then a long time to make up this
ointment? Well, I usually make about 14 pound of it in the month of May. That's supposed to be the month that the herb is at its best. And I make about 14 pounds of it then, and that tides me over the winter. I'm hardly ever stuck for it.
It's no coincidence that Mrs. Gillespie makes her herbal ointment in May, because the gathering of herbs has always been associated with certain dates.
There were certain days for collecting the herbs. Some herbs had to be collected on May morning, and sometimes the herb just had to be picked in the morning, or more precisely before sunrise. Another day for picking herbs was the St. John's Eve, Midsummer, and they were often used for protective purposes at this time of the year. If we take an example, the dandelion, we can see there's a large number of cures taken from it. Different parts of the plant were used. The juice from the dandelion, or the milk, was put on warts in order to cure them. Usually you had to do this for 9 consecutive mornings. And sometimes you had to even fast before you did this, which brings in some sort of purification before this act. Dandelions were also used as a blood tonic. The roots were boiled and the liquid was then taken in the morning. The milk was used as well as a cure for yellow jaundice. And the roots were boiled for liver, kidney troubles. The leaves then were used for sick stomach. A wine glass of it, the liquid, was taken every morning. And some people used the juice of dandelions to put on cuts in order to heal them. It's interesting that there is a drug which is taken from the roots of dandelions, which is used in modern medicine in liver complaints and as a blood tonic. It's a drug known as taraxacum.
We've gathered the flowers and made wine. That has to be done when, Annette? You have to gather
summer,
the flowers.
In June.
Yeah, around about June, they say the flowers are the best for then. And that's a very simple process, just a question of gathering the flowers and then fermenting them in a bucket and then transferring that and letting it ferment away for a few months and bottling it. That makes a beautiful drink. It's similar to white wine. And I have read that it's supposed to be a cure for arthritis and rheumatoid conditions in your joints. We've also gathered the leaves in spring when there's been no other green stuff for salads. If you mix it with a bit of cabbage, it makes a nice sort of bitter contrast to the cabbage. And we have also dug up the root and dried that off in the oven slowly and tried to roast it to make the dandelion coffee.
That's something that may become more popular.
Well, I'd say it could well, yes, in the times of this rising prices.
Yes. What about linseed or flaxseed?
Yes, we tried that and we still use that. We found that to be very good, especially with children. That is just a matter of boiling up the flaxseed for about half an hour, simmering it gently. And then you get a thick gelatinous mass which you have to thin with more water, and then a wine glass dose of that twice or three times a day, certainly one before bedtime, seems to loosen up colds and coughs.
The flax, of course, is not grown around here anymore.
No, we have to buy this in Dublin. We haven't found a local source for flax yet.
Howard Preston is a young Englishman who, with his wife and family, has settled in Knúderry near Crossnahan Roscommon. He makes a living growing and selling vegetables, and from vegetables to herbs was, he says, a natural progression.
We've been interested in growing our own food, and an interest in herbs comes off growing your own food for culinary use. And once you get interested in the herbs for culinary use, then I suppose you... the next extension is to get interested in the medicinal use. And so we've grown herbs and we've used wild herbs, you know, on a small extent for our own medicinal things. Like we mentioned the peppermint tea, which is very good for upset stomachs, and that comes from the lake shores here. We have used yarrow and elderflower too in cold cures. We mentioned the flaxseed, that's another good one for colds. But we haven't actually tried growing herbs specifically for medicinal use and building up our own medicine chest. We haven't got that far yet. We've enough things to do with the other vegetables, you know.
Well, you use the herbs in cooking, do you?
Well, Mrs. Preston? We grow the basic culinary herbs. We grow thyme, sage, chives, various ones like that. Yes, I use them a lot, in fact. I think they give a great flavour in food, as long as you don't overdo it.
Yeah. Garlic is, I suppose, we're just about crawling into the heading of herbs. I mean, that is one we do grow with a lot of interest, and we do use a lot of garlic too. And garlic is known from way back to have a lot of medicinal properties. It's an antiseptic, it's supposed to be bactericidal. And you know, the old thing about wearing garlic around your neck in a sock or some other concoction which is supposed to keep away colds. There's definitely something in the garlic.
Well, I gather it does in fact keep away all sorts of things, insects too, green fly, I think, or is it used in that way?
There is a school of thought about growing herbs and other plants alongside vegetables. I can't remember that there are one or two now. Leeks are supposed to keep away carrot fly and garlic, any of the onion family. But we've tried that and it doesn't work. I mean, not for carrots. The carrot fly here just, you know, takes no notice.
Some people discover herbs and the herb mystique on their own. Others, like Sean Boylan of Dunboyne near Dublin, might be said, literally, to have herbs in their blood.
From the time I was a child, I grew up with... working at herbs, and I live on a farm and I work on a farm, and my father, the rest of him, he spent a lifetime working at herbs, and I suppose without even realising it, started to gain a certain amount of knowledge about them and got to know things about them. Very often you wouldn't know the proper botanical names or so on, but you'd know whether the thing was good for. This herb might be good for one thing, one might be good for warts, and something else might be good for sting of a nettle and so on. That's really how it started, and without even realising it, I suppose, maybe it's the best way to learn, but, you know, just...
And they all have certain characteristics, all the herbs?
They have. You know, you can say, well, no, listen, that's only a weed. Well, a weed is something you don't want. If you have a crop of wheat and you have potatoes growing out in them, well, then the potatoes are a weed, and vice versa. If it's the,
a flower, you know, in the wrong place, as
a flower in the wrong place, yeah. that's basically yes. It, you know?
Yeah. But most of the herbs are used medicinally, are they?
Most of them are used medicinally. There are an awful lot of them that are not. There's one thing that we can grow well here, and grow, you know, is plants and weeds of all sorts, and, you know, they all have a property, and they all have a purpose. But if it's up to sort of men themselves to find out what they are. A lot of people know these things, and a lot of them have secrets and family secrets that are handed down and are afraid to tell people, and so on.
Well, what about yourself now? I've met people, in fact, only today I was talking to a man who says that what he has for a cure is a secret. Yeah. I wouldn't imagine there are, in fact, many secrets like that.
Well, of course, when people stop using the plants, and, you know, people became less aware of them and what they could do, so I suppose in that way they were nearly made a secret, but they're not really, you know.
They're all available.
They're all there. There's a purpose for them. A lot of it is you can learn about it through tradition and so on. A lot of it you can study and learn about it that way.
Well, how much of yours now is traditional and how much from books and experience?
It's hard to say, really. Because what I learned sort of from my father was... It became indoctrinated, really. You know, you absorbed it. You know, and it's there. It's a foundation. Is there? These other things. You see, the more you know about something, the more you realise you don't know about it.
Exactly.
And you know, you search and you're looking to find more about things. And I might know, say, that a nettle or nettle juice might be good for, good for blood troubles, for skin troubles particularly. But it also contains salts that are good for, say, pancreas, and so on and so forth. And that's the way it goes, you know.
Herbs have been used for all kinds of purposes in the past, and one peculiar use of nettles seems to have been responsible for the name Nettlemas Night being given to the night before May Day. George McClafferty of University College Dublin.
There isn't a lot known about the origin of that. It was... Boys used to go out and sting people, and sometimes it was used, people would get nettles and a boy would sting a girl he'd fancy, and this was sort of showing her that he did care or was interested.
Yes.
But
there were curative properties in the nettles too, weren't there?
The nettles have quite a few cures. Mainly they were used in the spring as blood tonic, and a lot of old people still remember as children being given the meals of nettles in the spring, and indeed there are probably still people who take them. But the nettle roots were not used in cures. The leaves of the plant were beaten into a pulp mixed with salt and applied to swollen areas in order to keep inflammation down, and the actual stings of the nettles were used quite a lot in Ireland for curing rheumatism. One old lady I was talking to told me a story about her father, who had very bad rheumatism, and he got this cure from an old person in the area to roll in a bed of nettles. So one morning he went out, took off all his clothes and rolled in the bed of nettles, and of course came up in a number of blisters, and he said it was very painful and that, but whatever acid that the nettle sting produces, it seemed to work, and he never suffered from rheumatism after that.
a related complaint had a less drastic herbal remedy. Dr. Patrick Logan.
Sciatica is a very, very painful disease. It starts in the small of the back and works its way down one leg usually and out through the foot. Now, the treatment of it, and the earliest reference I got to this treatment was in early medieval Ireland. The seeds of honeysuckle were gathered and drank in a concoction made of them, and they were drank. And this was an invaluable and infallible cure. And I'll tell you why. You had to take it for 40 days. And no sciatica would ever last any longer than 40 days anyway. So if you kept on drinking it for 40 days, your sciatica would be gone. Ergo, the seeds cured the sciatica. Well, that, I thought, a fellow who thought of that one was an extremely good doctor, because when the patient complained of his pain, you would say, it'll take the 40 days. This is the cure, but it takes 40 days. And that was the cure. And no more about it. So you had to put up with it for the 40 days.
Well, I don't use any herbs except the one herb. But the one herb that I use is good for 4 or 5 different complaints.
And what is it?
Well, no, I can't announce it on the wireless what it is. I won't announce it.
It's a secret?
It's a secret. No, I won't announce it. Because yeah. I said I have refused big money for it twice. To get it, and I won't announce it.
You're going to hold on to the secret?
I'm going to hold on to that secret, yeah.
But surely there's no secret about most of these herbs. They grow somewhere. They have to grow somewhere, and people must know about them.
We know that. But now, I shouldn't be announcing that on that. Supposing I could discover a herb for cancer, which would be worth millions and millions of pounds if it could be discovered or got, and it's growing in the ground if the people could know it. But that's the mystery. To Mr. Jaman, what the herb would be, because it says in God's holy word that all herbs are grown for him for all manners of diseases.
And they say that any harmful herb there's another one to counteract it. Is that right?
Well, there could be.
Well, say the dock and the nettle. That sort of thing.
So nettle is the best thing in the world for your blood. It's a pure, nettle is pure for... Make nettle tea and I'll use it and use it as a vegetable in the springtime. It's the best in the world for pure. So that's what's wrong with the world today. They've got off these old things that was used in my father's and mother's time. So even in gentlemen's houses, there's not a year, but they generally boil these hard times, nettles and cheese things, and there's another thing goes along the bridge. What do we call it? Oh, what's a nettle thing like that? It's a wonderful thing too there in the springtime. Dandelion.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. Dandelion. Mm.
And you can make wine out of it.
You can make
as well.
Wine out of dandelion wine, yes, and take it too. So the people is lost for the want of these things.
You know, the way if you get a reputation, say, for helping one condition, it can happen that people say, well, maybe if you can help that, maybe you can help something else. And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. It's more important, really, with it to realise what you can't do rather than what you can do.
Sean Boylan must be one of the few people in Ireland who grow herbs in any sort of quantity, and he's thinking of extending the commercial aspect of his work.
I suppose you get people coming to you, and around our area, there's been a lot of building, there's been a lot of drainage, the fauna changes, the flora changes. Sometimes you have to travel, say down the west or maybe further down along the east coast and so on. But then there's some who say artificial manure has been used, some many weed killers have been used. It just got to the stage that to have certain things that you'd want, we had to start to grow them.
At one time, herb gardens were common throughout Ireland. And even as close to Dublin as County Wicklow, many uses of herbs have been discovered recently by George McClafferty, who is doing a study of folk medicine in that county for the Folklore Department of University College Dublin.
It takes in all parts of the folk medicine, magical cures and herbal cures, and it's confined to material taken from the manuscripts in the Department of Irish Folklore. Most of the information comes from manuscripts which were made up in the late 1930s. They were collected by school children, and most of the herbal cures come from this, so they're probably more memories at this stage rather than being in use today, although some of them still are used. But
are there many folk cures still available around County Wicklow?
Well, I have tried myself, and I have got quite a few cures from some people. Again, there is some of the facts are not very precise. The thing of repeating 9 times, which comes into a lot of cures. Sometimes people will say repeat 8 times or 10 times, where that this has lost its importance. Then, as well as repeating the remedy a number of times, you have the addition of prayers onto some of them, like curing a wart by rubbing with dandelion juice. First make the sign of the cross over the wart with the dandelion. Or in some other cures, you have to finish off by saying, in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. These are the only prayers which I have come across.
There are no elaborate prayers.
There are elaborate prayers, but plants don't come into them. There are prayers for bleeding and prayers for toothache. And there's another one for curing St. Anthony's fire, which, oddly enough, is in Irish. And it comes from an area near Glendalough. The man who remembered this prayer knew no Irish. He just knew the sound of it, and it was taken down in this way.
Which proves, of course, that they are pretty ancient.
Well, a lot of the cures would be ancient, but then there are more which would originate maybe from the herbal books of the 18th and 19th centuries. There are other things then. Potatoes were used in a lot of cures. Potato water for curing chilblains, or a potato carried in your pocket to cure rheumatism. Like, they can't be any older than the 17th century.
Introduction of the potato,
that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the Irish countryside generally, the possibilities of our rich and varied flora are nowadays largely ignored. But in some of the Irish-speaking areas, knowledge of herbs and of their use for cures, for seasoning or for beauty treatment is still widespread. Bina McLaughlin from Malm Cross is one practitioner.
I know I've stood the sore throat for years down myself. You'll say, oh, he gave me such a tablet. Well, you'll see more going out, and they'll dig this under the white flower called the coulon. And he's like a potato. And he's boiled in milk. Well, of course, this was in the early stages by the Jews called the Connemara, whatever you call it, the Connemara Rhone. That'd be the army as they are bred in the early stages. It's pure white. It grows under a white flower. Well, that is boiled in milk and even a little grain of sugar. Well, they take that in spoons and spoons. It's just like a potato. And it's very, very sweet. Well, then they use the little thing that grows in between the water, where you see the water dash. Then it's very much like that fern. You call it fern, but we call it ranya. It's pisha biog grown, and it's green. Well, they chew that and chew. It's near, it comes out like green out of the mouth, and that brings down all the swelling. So that's whatever I used when my sore throat came. So it was gone in a few hours.
It's one of the ironies of life today that the more science and technology provide us with chemicals and antibiotics and alleged aids to living, the more people are turning to the traditional products of nature as used by an older generation. Health food shops are to be found nowadays in most cities and towns, and in one such shop in Great Strand Street, Dublin, amid the aroma of herbs and spices, John McLaughlin of Green Acres spoke of the nutritious foods around us.
The basic things that we sell are whole grains, and they're completely unrefined. They're different to white flour and white bread and white rice insofar as that they contain all the essential nutrients, that you don't have any of the bran removed, you don't have any of the germ removed, and they're complete, and they're totally there in the packet as the way they're grown. Also, a lot of them are grown organically, which they don't have any sprays or insecticides or anything like that on them. Second to the beans, we sell lots of second to the grains, we sell lots of nuts. We sell dookie beans, brown lentils, butter beans, soya beans, red kidney beans. And these also are grown organically, and they're found in the natural way that they're found is the way they're sold. Also, these are, if you like, you could think of them in terms of herbs, because being whole foods and having no insecticides or sprays, they also have a very beneficial effect on the body, medicinally speaking. The other grains besides rice, we've got buckwheat, we've got organic barley, we've got long and short grain rice, we've got three different varieties of rice. We have whole oat porridge, organic whole oats, is different to speedy cook and sprayed oats. We also have a freshly milled whole wheat flour every day. It's milled downstairs, and it's milled in a slow fashion so that none of the essential chemicals or minerals or vitamins are removed. And we also have freshly baked bread every day. And these are all whole grains.
Of the herbs, are they used mostly for culinary purposes?
No. We have a lot of herbs that we use for culinary purposes. We've got a lot of herbs down there that people make up into curry powders. We've got herbs like mugwort that people mix with rice. We then have a good selection of herbs like chamomile, oregano, and sarsaparilla, which are used as a medicinal herbs. There's a lot more of them down there.
What herbs sell mostly?
The herbs that sell mostly are the ones which are used for culinary purposes. Basically, they're the ones that sell most, because people use them in stews and soups and that to flavour them.
Is there an increasing use of these now?
Well, we have found that we carried a very, very large range of North American medicinal herbs, which we have dropped because people weren't buying so much. They're more or less going into the culinary herbs, like the chili pods, the sarsaparilla, and the cinnamon, and those that they use in curries and to flavour foods.
And what about the ones for medicinal purposes? What's most popular there?
Chamomile, mugwort, and dandelion, and dandelion root. They seem to be very, very popular. Because I suppose they're the most common to hear when people read herbs that are grown in Ireland, they go for those ones there.
What are they used for mostly? What do they cure?
Dandelion is very good for the blood, extremely good for the blood. Comfrey is another herb, another medicinal herb that's used very much. It's used for healing cuts and bruises. It's also used as... there's another one down there, slippery alum, which is a big seller that people use for stomach upsets because it's very beneficial to the intestines.
With the increasing interest in herbs and health foods goes an interest in books about them, and Green Acres caters for that with a bookshop as well. How do doctors view this trend towards the natural foods and the herbal remedies?
Well, there's a lot to be said for them, and they keep you away from more dangerous...
Keep you off alcohol, possibly, for one thing,
even
or cigarettes.
To keep you away from taking too many of even our antibiotics. This is one of our greatest worries now. See, people take antibiotics for everything, and when they really need an antibiotic, they're going to be insensitive to it. So it would be much better that they took their health foods, and whenever an antibiotic was needed, that we'd get the result that we hope from it.
So there's a move back to the herbs and the things of nature, to a recognition that the Cailleachs of Sir Jonah Barrington and the medieval herbalists and the folk curers with the remedy in the fields about them had more real knowledge and expertise than they got credit for. The final word to John McLaughlin.
I think that people have come to the conclusion that that pills don't have all the answers, and that there's also a feeling towards going back to living more naturally and getting away from the more chemicalised form of medicine that we have. And also, the country itself is steeped in the tradition of using herbs. And people are coming back to that, to grassroots, if you can pardon the phrase.
Literally,
but
yes.
They're coming back to that. And they're seeing that there's an awful lot in the old herbal tradition, the old ways of eating and the old ways of living. And they're going back to that. You know, as in the case of alternative technology, alternative building, alternative living styles, herbal styles, and alternative eating has a place in that just as much as anything else. And they're finding that's great.